Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And look for the menu tab.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake. We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.
Say the US wants to avoid at all costs. Gaddafi didn't give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency that would rival.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. This is Friday, and we got a serious show lined up for you tonight. I have literally did some research, and I'm finding out all over the world the conversation is Kevin Kaepernick. This is an opportunity for us, brothers and sisters, for us to be able to maintain the subject matter. They're trying to change the content, okay? Now, we all know Colin Kaepernick literally made a statement when he started to go down on one knee during the national anthem. Now, white America is trying to make this a patriotic issue. This is not a patriotic issue. And this is why we must participate in the conversation and open the doors, because now they are wondering why we don't understand their point of view, which is excellent, because this conversation is being had on almost every major sports network and news network outside of the country. One of the unique things about this is that it's starting to roll now. You know how you got you put the snowball at the top of the hill, the pebble, and you just let it roll down the snow hill? That's what's happening, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, there are teams all over the world that are starting to make these silent protests and forcing the conversation to be able to be brought to the forefront. Now, what is unique about this is just that everybody that is non-African American is coming from this here from a specific point of view of patriotism. But if you come from a point of patriotism, you do not have to focus on the subject matter of the demonstration itself. So therefore, we have to put our conversation in order so that we do not let them change the narrative, because they do not, and let me repeat this, they do not want to discuss such a sensitive subject, because literally it shines the light on white privilege and how it has progressed to this point. Okay, now one of the unique things about the situation is that now they're starting to move the conversation from the perspective of the player to the owner. Now, why do they do that? They do that because these are the money makers of these particular sports. All right, now they're trying, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, they're trying to hold a hard line, and their hard line that they're holding is, I think it's unpatriotic. He's a traitor. He's picking up, he's starting stuff on a team that should be cohesive. But yet, they're not focusing on the anthem itself. See, when you focus on the anthem itself, you have to go to the wording. And when you go to the wording, it even gets even more entailed. Because the wording, if those of you who do not know the national anthem, should look up the printed word of the national anthem and look primarily at the third verse. Now, when you speak and you go in online and you type in printing of the national anthem wording, you might get the first verse because that's all we ever see over and over. When it's sung, it's only the first verse because the second isn't as tenuous, but the third is on top because the third literally points fingers not only at us as a people at that time, which were under the tyranny of slavery, which we're still under the tyranny of slavery, but now it's Jim Crow slavery. But in reality, they were speaking in reference to there was Africans who literally were slaves. And during the separation of the Americas from Britain, Britain offered freedom to those slaves that would literally fight on Britain's side, all right? And one of the real soft spots in America is that after that war, and Britain realized they were going to take some losses, one of the losses they didn't take was the Americas, or the Continentalists, they wanted those slaves that fought on the British side to be bought back and tried, which they weren't going to be tried, but these are the words they were using, tried for treason. Now, they weren't going to be tried. They were going to be slaughtered. But Britain, in keeping in what they had literally lured these slaves away to become a part of their arm here to do battle, was the freedom. So they said, no, we are going to take every one of these slaves that worked in reference to our interests, that means they went to war against the colonists for the British interests, back to England and give them freedom. Okay? So when Francis Scott Key wrote the national anthem, he wrote in these slaves. That's right. And he called them slaves. And he also said in this anthem, in the third verse, that they were literally traitors and that they needed to be pursued beyond the grave. Okay? Now, that meant that literally they need to be hunted down like dogs in today's terms. But yet, since they don't sing that part is never focused on. But since this demonstration, the song has been focused on. This is what's so unique about Westernism. Westernism uses deception so well that if you are not paying attention, you become a part of the deception without realizing that it's against your interests. And you know, the sad part about that is that as we begin to wake up, some people take that with an angry tone and they don't educate themselves on how to articulate a point of view to stress their interests without being elevated to the point of emotion. And you have to understand, Westernism believes that you're emotional people. And therefore, when you get emotional, they inherent fear kicks in on them. Now, I did a show about this before, but I'm trying to show you how the two are so diametrically connected with how they can react. So, look at Colin Kaepernick now. He's being confronted by owners that are saying they don't want their team to even play against it. But they're locked in contract, just like Colin Kaepernick is locked in contract. So either way it goes, they're playing. Now they're trying to say he shouldn't start. But even when they don't start it, they end up beating him. See, the dynamics that are working here, my brothers and sisters, gives us an opportunity to be able to converse about an issue that white America has gone out its way to avoid. And what issue is that? That is the racist nature of white supremacy. And understand how I said that. Because white supremacy encompasses every major organized established theater in America. Now, to give you an idea of what I'm saying, say you come home today from work and you're feeling good and say, you know what, darling, let's go out to dinner. Well, do you realize when you sit down at that table, if you are ignored for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, someone else comes in, they walk up to them, serve them, and now it's 20 minutes. And the people get their water, and it may just be drinks, but they're already given their order to go into the back kitchen. This is a form of racism. Now, we know we have put up with this on many occasions, to some degree. But it doesn't affect white people like that. So they don't want to look at it as it is. You know what they say? Oh, she didn't see you. Oh, we're invisible now? They always have an excuse to cover up why that behavior demonstrated by that specific person who literally should be serving you is ignoring you. So we have this opportunity, and I'm going to tell you what's good about this opportunity. We're dealing with a different era of white people. When I say that, they're not the old guard that was stone-fished and didn't want to discuss it. No, these young white yuppies nowadays, they want to feel as though nothing is off the table in order for them to have a very good knowledge on how to control the conversation in order to keep the balance. Because, see, to them, it's a balancing act. To us, it's not. The balancing act to them is, as Ben Stein puts it, for African Americans not to see the irrelevancy that their role plays in our lives. Now, let me repeat that so you have a very clear understanding. Ben Stein, a multimillionaire, which is a white person also, was interviewed, and in his interview, he said that in order for white supremacy to work, black circumstances must be irrelevant to our prime objective. And do you realize how true what he says is? Because look at all of the people who have been shot in the streets, who have been pulled over for traffic citations and died, who have literally been confrontational verbally and died. See, the dynamics that are involved here gives us an opportunity. If we can be able to constantly bring us back to the full narrative of the primary subject of Brother Kaepernick's sit-in. And the reason why I'm pointing it out to you that way is because people are, now this is their conversation. Well, I think he's just been downright patriotic. And to me, if you're unpatriotic, you're a traitor. And as a traitor, we don't feel as though you should have a right to have a professional level in which we're paying you our resources to come and see you play, because you're not honoring our traditions. And understand how I said that. It's a tradition. This is not like he's breaking contract. This is a tradition that is practiced by every form in America before a major event. Now, brothers and sisters, listen. I really want you some feedback from you tonight. I really need you to be able to be converse about this in different circles, because they're out there. They're out there. But if you are going to be sublime to them, then they're going to think that your interest is not important. See, we must be able to say, excuse me, I mean, I'm two friends and you're talking about this. I think that if I could add a little bit, I think you're missing a very main point. And the main point is the subject matter of his protest. It has nothing to do with the actual Star Spangled Banner per se, but since it brought out the issue that it's a very racist song, we should really be able to openly conversate about all of these items. But you know what? They don't want that. Because, see, that moves from patriotism to their history to their natural behavior. You understand what I said? Their natural behavior. Because they are not hostile to each other as much as they are hostile to people of color. So that means that amongst their own group, they could get along as long as everybody else has somewhere else to direct their hostility. And understand how I said that. They get along as long as everybody in the group has somewhere else to direct their hostility, i.e., people of color. So now, in order for them to control the narrative, they don't want to focus on the subject matter, We must keep the focus on the subject matter so that we can take them into the next level. What is the next level? Discussing the content of the song. Because when you discuss the content of the song, then they want to, you should really be pointing them to the fact that here's a person that wrote a song that dealt with the so-called war that the United States was going through. But in reality, the song was based on how they can contain and control those slaves that made a decision on their own. Well, brothers and sisters, this is Brother Davis, and I'm coming at you live because I really do think that this is an opportunity. I want you to call tonight because I want your perspective. I want to hear how you would discuss this so that you would be able to sustain an intelligent argument without injecting or reflecting emotion. Because when we do that, they disconnect. And you know, they disconnect because they don't really want the conversation. But they disconnect because they have been programmed to believe that when we get emotional, we do things that are out of our control. And that may be hostile to them. So in order to keep them at the table, we have to have not only a good temperament with this conversation, but even when things are said that rubs you wrong, you still have to be able to sustain an air of professionalism and being able to get back the conversation back on the track of your interests. So, I think it's exciting. I'm going to tell you, never before have white people said to other white people that there is a point here that you're making that we're missing. And white people are starting to have that conversation with each other. Now, they may not like it, but understand what I'm saying is the dynamics are there are a younger people that are not being victimized by the ways of racism the way their parents were. So they think because they have always received the benefits of white privilege that they can control the narrative. This is why we must be able to converse with the control so that we can force them not only to see but to have a learn to understand why we have the rationale that we have. Now, where's this going to go? Actually, I don't know, because there are hardcore racists out there. There is a certain segment of America that doesn't make a difference what you say. This is just their nature. But this is happening at a unique time in history, because, see, everything that you may not see, but we have been talking about, is still a product of the same kind of racism. Now, let me bring clarity to that. Perfect example is the U.S. dollar on the world market. Do you realize the dollar was leveraged on the world market because of white principle? That's right. White supremacists wanted world control on the market. So how did they do that? They literally established three major things. They established the International Monetary Fund, they established the World Health Organization, and they established NATO. Now, these three major organizations have their hands in every country in the world. You see, that's why there's the confusion that white supremacy brings out is in every aspect of the world. Any place that there is color, we all have the same problem. And don't just take my word for it. Do some due diligence. We all have the same problems. Whether it's Brazil, whether it's India, whether it's Africa, whether it's Asia, there are black Asians. Whether it's Russia, there are black Russians. You see, we literally are all over the world because we were the first. And how do I know that? Because of my own due diligence and through my research, I have found out that we were not only the oldest civilization, but we were the most intellectually stern civilization. Why I say stern was because we traveled to other countries and did trip. We didn't take their land. You see, that's the difference between colonialism. When we would go to another country and we went on the shore, we didn't go on the shore with our goods and a gun. No. What we did was approach them like humans, okay? Now, there might have been a party that went ashore, a party of maybe three or four people. Now, the reason being is because that way, when you're in the background of backyard of someone else, you're not intimidating to them. Okay? So then you could say to them, you know, we represent a group of people that have specific skill sets, and we trap and we hunt and we manufacture, and we would like to show you some of what we do, so that if you see something you like, you can show us what you do, and if we see something that you do that we like, we could possibly do trade. See, so you have what's called a standing respect for humanity, period. So therefore, Africans traveled all over the world. That's why the fingerprint of Africa is all over the world. And if you don't believe it, do some due diligence. They're finding pyramids all over the world. That pyramids that have the basic same foundational design as the oldest in Africa, from South America to Europe to India to China to Hawaii, all over the world. So I'm trying to get you to understand that this opportunity allows you to openly discuss things and take them slowly to the next level, so that they can begin to understand that regardless of what they were taught, there's a certain degree of deception that they must live by in order for them to sustain this so-called era of white supremacy. And that's what it is.
Brother Davis, I have a comment.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Come in with it. Come on.
Yeah, first let me just remind the listeners, you're listening to Tando Radio Show on the Black Talk Radio Network. The call-in number, if you would like to add to the conversation, is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Hit *6 and 1 if you would like to comment on air. Brother Davis, I think you are exactly right about an opportunity to have that conversation, you know, in the wider public. But I mean, I saw its value in propaganda right away. You know, propaganda to be used on for our benefit as an oppressed people on the planet. But what has frustrated me, or I shouldn't really say frustrated, because I really didn't get that deeply bothered by it, but let's just say annoyed me to a small degree, is that I see victims of the oppression instead of focusing on what Colin Kaepernick is protesting about. They're focusing on the fact that he has a white parent. And that just annoys me to a small degree. And I'm like, you're just missing the whole point, you know, and why are you focusing on something that is out of his control and, you know, shouldn't even matter to begin with. But this person is standing up, Colin Kaepernick, for black people. He identifies as a black person. He has a black parent. He lives as a black man. So why, Brother Davis, why are some black people focusing in on his mixed race status instead of focusing on to put it in his words, these killer cops who are creating these dead bodies in the street and then ending up with paid leave?
Great question, Scotty. Great question. Now, that comes back to the concept of changing the narrative. You see, what they're not saying is that Colin Kaepernick is black, because we know that according to the colonists, if you had one drop of black blood in you, you were black. So literally, that doesn't take away from the issue that he's bringing out because he had a white parent. Really, that shows that his parent was open enough for him to have dialogue on both sides of the conversation. And we have to respect that, because he has stepped out in such a way that now it has spread around the world. And we have people talking who have never talked before.
Let me see if I can rephrase what I'm saying. Just like how you said that you got these racist suspects who want to make it about patriotism, and it ain't about patriotism. So I'm saying, on the flip side, we got some non-white people who want to make it about Colin Kaepernick's race instead of making it about the issues.
And absolutely, Scotty.
Yeah.
Hey, Scotty, don't they always have them?
It just don't. It doesn't sound
like what's the sheriff out there in Wisconsin?
David Clark.
That's right. They parade those people around like they speak for the majority. They don't. But the reason why they do that is because they're not trying to influence the people who have been victimized. They're trying to influence those people who believe, oh, I understand the fear. Well, the only reason why you understand the fear is because if you need it to work for your principles of white privilege, it's available to you. But it's still not available to us. And that is why the narrative must remain in the control of the subject matter and not what they're trying to change it to be. And see, every time I get into this conversation, I got to tell them, no, wait, you're moving away from the point. You're trying to say that this has to do with patriotism. I'm telling you, as a Vietnam veteran, I was not insulted by his action because I understand. I lived the very thing he's protesting. You see, we have to take control. And even in those, with people that look like us, because we know that what motivates America is the greatest evil that a person can be victimized by, and that is greed. Because if a person literally wants you to do or say what they want you to do or say, they're going to find out what it is that will require you to work for their principle. And in most cases, it comes down to money. So that want, that need or that want for money is based on their greed to have it. So therefore, you can always do some manipulating. And that's why people fail to realize the society functioned before money came into play. But money literally was a tool to allow white supremacy to leverage itself. That's why I understand when I said that the three major organizations was the International Monetary Fund, NATO, and the World Health Organization. And these players are in every country, because if they put you in debt through the International Monetary Fund, they can leverage anything they want in your country through the World Health Organization, and they could justify it with NATO. So we literally have to stay on top of our game, because I'm going to tell you something. What is funny to me is that a person would even take that as an issue, the fact that he's of mixed heritage. Come on. I mean, think about it. Most people in America, even white people, are from mixed heritage. But they don't want to focus on that either. So literally, we could control that conversation to get it back on subject matter. And that's the whole thing that I'm trying to get people to understand tonight during tonight's show. And listen, my brothers and sisters, you got another question, Scotty?
No, we got a break coming up.
Excellent. All right, take a break. We'll call it after the break, y'all.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. We're back, Brother Davis. Brother Davis, are you there? You might have.
Yes, I'm right here. I'm right here. I have myself muted. Good evening, brothers and sisters. Welcome back, and I'm excited about this conversation tonight. If you have any opinion, please pick up that phone. You add content to the way we can converse about getting this point across as delicately as possible. Now, understand, I don't really care how they receive it, but I do care that we are able to convey it. And if we're able to convey it, then they will at least look from a different prism. Now, and the reason why I use that term is because, see, we look from a different prism than white people. Prism is the view that we have of a specific content, all right? The prism that they're looking at is from the prism of white supremacy, white privilege, okay? So a lot of them take issue, not because they don't like it, because a lot of them really could care less. But when they get to see the effects, they're going to be approached by those of their color, whites, other whites. They're going to talk to them and say, look, we can't have this. Do you realize what's going to happen? If we allow one person to do this, do you realize what's going to happen? Well, now they're realizing it, because it's not only happening in America, this is happening around the world. And here's the powerful thing. Here's sports season. See, after football comes baseball. Basketball. Then after basketball comes baseball. Do you think for 1 minute that this quiet demonstration is not going to show itself again with the aspect of black Americans being gunned down here in the United States? There have been over 300 black people killed by police. And those situations were all in a negative tone. Most of them were. Don't get me wrong. Most of them were. But some of them, they probably had some sort of rationale. And understand this. We may never understand it because of the prism that we look at their what they do from. But what's so unique about it is that now white people are beginning to say to me, well, you know, I never really had to deal with that. Well, can you identify with it? Well, I said, well, no, not really. So I tell them this story about, and it was on Facebook. There was two ladies. One lady was white, and one lady was black. Was actually, there was none of them totally white. One was mixed, like just like Colin Kaepernick. She was mixed, but she was light enough to appear to be white. Okay? Now, these were both professional ladies. And the one lady was related to the other lady through marriage. So they did this thing together. This particular day, they went shopping, and the black woman had her 10-year-old daughter with her. Now, her 10-year-old daughter had probably experienced on a child's level different aspects of racism, but never really to the degree where she's seen it in the presence of her mother. Well, they went to a grocery store and they went shopping, and as they came out the line, the one who appeared to be white went first. And she said, well, I tell you what, I don't have any cash. So he said, let me write you a check. And the girl said, okay. She said, this is the price of the food. And that's all right. Just write me a check and we'll go ahead and we'll cash you out. And it took her about maybe 35, 40 seconds. And then she rung and said, okay, thank you. Goodbye. And she pulled her card forward and so pulled it aside. And then the sister came in, also a professional. She just had her daughter with her. So she was ringing her groceries up and she said, well, I have a check. And she said, okay. So she said what the price was. She said, well, the price is $70, something like that. And then she said, well, I need two forms of ID. Now, she didn't ask the one woman who appeared white for two forms of ID, but she asked the woman who definitely was black for two forms of ID. Then she noticed her daughter's reaction. Because her daughter knew both the ladies. And her daughter was like, let me shut up. You're not children now. So the sister begins to go in. She gets her two forms of ID. So the woman who was related, remember I told you the two were related to Mary. she came back and said, why are you doing this to her? And the white woman said, excuse me. And she grabbed the book from under the calendar. And the book had all of the names of the people who wrote bad checks. Well, by this time, the sister's daughter was not only insulted, she was upset. So the woman who appeared white said, why are you doing this? And she said, doing what? She said, now, I just wrote you a check. You didn't ask me for any ID. She said, oh, that's all right. I know you. You could have been here before. She said, no, I haven't. She said, I've never been here. She said, the one person that's been here is this lady right here. I'm visiting her. This is the market she shops in. And she said, well, this is our procedure. She said, let me speak to a manager. Now, the reason why this elevated was because there was now other people around. There were two older white women that were back of the sister and her daughter. And then there was the cashier next door. We had people in there. And these people that were on the other side was like, you know how they're making gestures as if this was like something that black people should not do. Okay? Well, when the manager came out, the woman who appeared to be white, she said, listen. She said, this is Professor so-and-so talking about the sister. She is a highly respected professor at such and such a college, so local. And she and I go shopping in this store, and she has been so disrespected. She has done the very thing that I have done, and I came to the counter, and she said, matter of fact, my costs were greater than her costs. And I told her I was going to give her a check. She took my check and never asked me for ID. But yet, when this woman told her she was going to write her a check, she asked her for not one, but two forms of ID. Then she goes under the counter and she starts looking in this book in reference to whether she may be in here or not. And she said, even if she's not upset, I am highly insulted. Well, this is the lesson that white people have to operate in that are sincere about growing. And they don't want to see that lesson. But when it's in their face, they have to pay attention to it. So needless to say, the manager survived the situation. She sent the cashier away somewhere and took the people to a side and discussed it with them. But the whole content I want you to understand is that the effect on the child was so emotional that literally, this woman, when she stepped in, she was playing the role of humanism. And see, that's what white people have to see. They have to see themselves in the role of humanism. And then when they don't see it, we have to point it out to them. Because if not, you know what they'll say? Oh, I didn't understand. Well, you should have. Because if the situation was reversed, it would give you clarity. But since you operate in the area of white privilege, you are blind to see where your input can make a difference. And see, that is what makes this conversation so important. We are at a time now for those white people, and there are some, who really want to be as fair as possible in the circumstances and times of which we live. So we must give them the understanding that if you're going to operate in that narrative, you cannot do that silently. You must speak up when you see these injustices done to people of color, even if the only people around you are the people that hear you. Because what makes a difference is when someone initiates a change, that other people realize they have that power. So, brothers and sisters, please, call me tonight. Because tonight, I'm ready to give you all of the tools to go out on Sunday when they do that national anthem thing to decide whether you want to stand or sit. And you know the sad part about it is a lot of people don't even think about it depending on the parties that they are in. But you know what? I'm not into the NFL like that anymore. But if I was, this would be an opportunity for me. Because I would go to places, those sports clubs, and bars, and I've heard this conversation. Because white people don't want the truth. They want deception. But when it's in their face, you're going to find there's a certain degree of white people who say, you know what, I may not understand it, but I think it's fair. And that's all. Because when they think it's fair, they are now even agreeing with the aspect of a different perspective. And we must change their perspective. Now, what is so unique about the times, what I was saying before about just the timing itself? We are watching the fall of white supremacy around the world. But the reason why we haven't played a major role in participating in this process is because this is the inside organization. You see, when the American dollar had so much power on the market, they could exercise their supremacy anywhere they went. They did it with their military. They did it with their conversations. They did it in their actions. But they were the first ones to say, we have a right to judge the morality of others. Like they couldn't see the immorality that they were doing themselves. This is why the conversation is so powerful. Because now, guess what? For those of you who don't know, on that 27th, when the International Monetary lets the world know that the new kid on the block is the renminbi backed by gold, every major international transaction that is dealing with money, they're moving to gold. You know why? Because it has substance behind it, not a promise. Now, where the power of the American dollar was in the petrodollar position. Now, look, the petrodollar position. The petrodollar position was all oil bought around the world had to be done in American dollars. So that meant that there was constantly a flow of American money going around the world. That will cease. That money will come home. Are y'all getting this picture yet? Because if you're not, when that dollar is announced that it's no longer in the power position around the world, and these economies start to crash, because there's a lot of economies that are literally skeletoned up by that American dollar. Now, what does skeleton up mean? That means that they have based the value of their gross national product on the hardy strength of the American dollar. That was understandable 35, 40, 50 years ago. But we're in a new era now. And when they go to pay their bills and they come out with them American dollars, there are countries saying, no, we don't want that. Oh, by the way, if you got gold, that's profitable. But if you don't, we'll take renminbis. They know what they're doing. And they know what they want. So those dollars will return here. And when they do return here, the interest rate on the American dollar and everything that you buy with it is going to go through the roof. Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot of chaos. But these are the things that we've been planning. We have been planning on. So I don't want you to think that that's going to be a shock to your system. What I do want you to understand is at this stage, at this time, this conversation needs to be had because it's going to start opening the door for people to realize, you know what? They're just like us. Now, the power of the statement, they're just like us, is emulsified. Why? Because right now, we're in an election. And on one side of the election, we have a candidate, Donald Trump, who is trying to tell you he's not a racist, but he's perpetuating a racist attitude all over America, which I have been discussing, all over America. So therefore, those people who literally want to so-called take back their country, if you have gone to gun shows in the last year and a half, they're there. You know why? Because they're getting loaded up for mayor. The reason why they're getting loaded up for mayor is because they've been scared into it. You think about all of the different things that have been on TV where they always point out that was an African-American. I was a block. Well, they literally was telling them, guard your doors, your houses, your cars, and your daughters because the blacks are coming. There is a governor in New Hampshire who literally said to the police department, when you see a black person up here, then you need to accost them to see what their ID is, what they're doing here, who they're visiting. Because all they're doing is, and this is his quote, all they do in is bring in drugs, they get our children addicted, and then they pregnant our daughters. And now we have children, our daughters are walking around with kids that are mixed breed that they don't want and we don't want. But yet we lose a child. This is the mentality they're trying to scare the rest of the world or in that environment with. And guess what? when something like that catches hold, it's like a virus. It literally runs. But if you ask them, and there's this so-called new TV show out now called What is my background? Well, where they take a little bit of slob out your mouth and they run your DNA and they can tell you where you're from. But a whole lot of white people getting shocked. Oh, I'm Scotch-Irish. And find out, no, they're not Scotch-Irish. They're some kind of Lebanese. Or they might be some sort of Indian. But they see the world is trying to tell everybody that it's not what you think it is. But yet, there is a select aspect of the world who wants to hang on to a way that has been more destructive. So they're creating things to be even have a greater degree of destruction. We can do something. And this is why we must be able to take the conversation and control the narrative. Because what Colin Kaepernick has done was needed. And when I seen it being done, I said, you know what? This is going to spread. This is going to spread like fire. Because, see, there was no violence in his action. Understand? They always call you violent people. There was no violence in his action. And guess what? It's being enhanced. Because remember what Seattle Seahawks did? They made a similar gesture when they came out holding each other's arms and linked arms. And that was their way of protesting the same issue. You see, we now are at a place where we can make positive change. And if we don't take advantage of this, we are going to allow people like Hillary Clinton, who is a warmonger, and Donald Trump, who is an undercover racist, to implement plans that literally are going to result in the destruction of America. And see, we have to understand this, that our problem with politics is the same problem that most white people have, unless they're in that upper 10%. And those are multimillionaires. And by the way, if you didn't know, most of them left the country already. Oh yeah, because they don't want to be in direct line of what they know is coming. You see, greed has perpetuated all of this. So if the elections move clear, and they are moving closer, and you got always wondering, I wonder if it's really going to happen. Because Hillary Clinton, is she healthy or is she not? Donald Trump is even trying to put a somber twist on his character. It's not. Now, believe me, it's out of his character. He's literally a hothead. But, I mean, don't get me wrong. This is a part of the persona of running elections. And for those of you who don't know, believe me, Bernie Sanders is not far from this conversation. Because if Hillary's health doesn't continue to hold up, at least until after the election, they're going to need somebody to fill in. They're not going to take her vice president because he wasn't selected by the people. So believe me, they're keeping Bernie Sanders well informed. Well informed. But all of this plays a role in how we as black people can begin to articulate our issues so that we can at least get understanding. You know what understanding does? Understanding allows them to open the door to have police review boards so that we don't have one judge looking at a circumstance and deciding whether it should be guilty or not guilty, knowing that according to white supremacy, black issues are irrelevant. And you know, you may not like that, but understand how I said that. In order for white supremacy to function, black interests must be irrelevant. But now they'll play Kaepernick with that. I think he signed a $12 million contract. You realize if they could have got rid of Kaepernick already, they would have. But somebody got to pay that, brother.
It's a $120 million contract.
Pardon me?
$120 million contract. But it has a whole bunch of caveats in there, so it's not like, you know, and they can cut him at any time because he was saying that I could be cut for taking his stance.
Yeah, he could be. But if they do, they have to prove it's immoral, because that's the only clause they can put it under. You see, there's always a clause for a company to put a for the team to have an out.
No. They could have cut him, because none of these contracts, you still had to go out there and compete and make the team. Just because you under contract don't mean nothing. If they cut you that and you don't make the team, that contract is null and void. And he said that they may cut him as a result of his stand, but he's more than prepared to live life without football if they do.
That's right. And you know why it is? Because literally, according to a $20 million contract, they still got to give him $12 million for the year.
Plus what he's already made, this is like his fifth year in the NFL, so he ain't no poor. He not poor in the poorhouse or anything like that.
No, and that's another good issue that literally works for the favor of those people who are looking at this here from a different balance perspective. Kaepernick didn't just do this overnight. He thought this through. You understand? So even if he didn't realize the effect it was going to have on all of these other areas around the world, he's getting more than what he bargained for. So believe me, for those people who don't understand the magnitude of the action, this brother has really, really set things in motion here. Because I'm going to tell you, the racists now, they're making songs up about how they want to go to war. I'm telling you, they're making songs up. Google it. Don't take my word for it. I always think the person that does their own due diligence can testify about what they know. So Google it. But I'm going to tell you something. We have an excellent opportunity here, brothers and sisters, please. If you pick up your phone and even just present the conversation however you would like to, we can converse about it. We can open the doors to how you can be able to portray your point of view in a manner which would not get you emotionally involved, but be clear about the subject and the content you're trying to convey. Because, and I can't, believe me, I can't get you to understand enough. Regardless of who you're talking to and how emotional they get, you cannot. Because when you get emotional, you allow them to change the narrative. So you got to be able to say, wait, let's, that's not what we're talking about. You bought that in. See, like, well, it's unpatriotic. That's not what his issue is. You bought that in. His issue is he's focusing on the way African Americans have been treated and the gunning down of them in the streets. You see, that way, when they try to change the content, you're giving them the truth and they're being speculative. And you got to be able to convey that. No, wait a minute, that's speculative. I mean, anybody who has a perspective can come in and say, change the narrative. But if you focus on exactly the content of what he did, you literally could take that conversation anywhere. And this is the importance of us being able to have this conversation. And this is the importance of you being able to articulate your points of view. This is the time. This is Friday. If you ain't got ready to go out tonight, or you ain't going out tonight, this would add to your evening. Just call and just give a perspective. Give me what you have heard so that we can openly discuss this. Because I'm going to tell you now, everybody, every black person fails to realize the magnitude of this conversation. Because we can take this anywhere. You know why? Because white supremacy is everywhere. And as soon as they say, well, you fail to realize how unpatriotic this is. Well, wait a minute, why do you say that? Because he's a traitor. No, you can't say he's a traitor. I'm going to tell you why you can't say he's a traitor. Because this is the same thing that's going on in the prison industrial complex. Well, what do you mean? Just like black people are being shot down in the street who are out here exercising their rights of so-called freedom, we got people who are being victimized in a prison because they have got caught in a situation that may have been or may not have been of their making. But yet, in that circumstances, there are corporations profiting off of the time that he's going to spend it. You see, we can control this conversation. We can literally take this anywhere we want to. And if people talk about, well, you know what, you fail to realize why he's unpatriotic. Well, wait a minute. Now, let me, since you say he's unpatriotic, and I've talked to some veterans. Now, I've talked to veterans who went away to war, and they come back here, but yet they can't even get jobs because they're black. They have skills that are considered to be mediocre, although they have professional status. You see, we can go anywhere with this, but we have to be able to arm ourselves with the right way, the right words, so that we don't be victimized. And believe me, there are going to be some. There's all, look, they always find what's the rapper who says there's no racism. They find people like that. And the reason why is because
Lil Wayne,
they're talking for money.
Let me give some clarification on what Lil Wayne said, because it was brought up yesterday on my program. So I went and I looked up Lil Wayne's comments, and he did not disagree with what Colin Kaepernick is doing. And he isn't. And what he said is he's never experienced racism. Lil Wayne said he's never experienced racism. So he telling. Now, I don't know, or he don't know if racism been practiced against him. I can't speak on his personal experiences, okay? But he did not say that in a way that he was attacking Colin Kaepernick. That's been the media spin on it.
That's right. Once again, the media sees the narrative. Now, I don't know of you who are listening to Shannon Sharpe's show, but Shannon Sharpe has been on this from day one. And I'm going to tell you something. I have a lot of respect for the man's athletic ability, but he don't know. Over these last week or two, this brother has been taking the bull by the horns, and he has been subjective in every area, but made the focus stay the same. And he's taken somebody that's a co-seat with him. It's a white guy, blonde hair, blue eyes. And he broke that whole concept down of the prism of cultural viewing. And he told him, he said, because you come from a white background which has been privileged and controlled, and you have all of those nuances that the white supremacy offers you in your upbringing, there is no way that you could see this circumstance from the perspective that I could see it from. He said, because when I came up in Alabama, because that's where he's from, he said, we were dirt poor. He said, there was time when the only thing we ate is what we grew. So I mean, he got down to the roots. He said, I live a privileged life now. He said, it's only a privilege because of my hard work. He said, but I go home and I give back every opportunity I get, because I see me and a lot of those people that are back there in school. He broke it down so tough that his co-anchor said, well, I guess we have those two things to identify. He said, yeah, but understand this. When you go back to your old high school, you go back to a school of privilege. When I go back to my old high school, I've had to build a football field because they were playing on dirt. People wouldn't know bleachers. He said, because when I say I'm from Lower Alabama, I'm from Lower Alabama. He said, we didn't really have a major football field until I got to high school. He said, but I go out here now, and these they're playing on major fields. I mean, their parents are sitting in the bleachers and everything. He said, you know, that's something that was a dream. He said, just to be able to play high school and then college and then play professional ball. He said, you're right, I feel privileged. He said, but I work for it, and I never forget it, and I always go back where I started. And those were the principles that allowed him to be able to take this circumstance and articulate this from every perspective. And this is what we need to do, my brother. So pick up the phone, give us a call. Listen, we're going into another break. So take the opportunity to call in. Bring your perspective so we can converse. This is Brother Davis.
You're listening to the Tando Radio Show on Black Talk Radio Network. If you have a question or comment, give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit star 61 to comment on air. We'll be right back.
Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
We're back. Brothers and sisters, listen. I know it seems like I'm trying to hit you over the head with this conversation. I'm not trying to hit you over the head with this conversation. I want you to be able to be informed so that when you have this conversation, you have the tools you need to be able to not only have it, but be a functional part of making change happen. And the reason why is because it's us. There's nobody going to save us but us. So we have to take that very seriously. And the sad part about it is that a lot of us are just not equipped for it. That's why it's so important that we take the time and be able to arm you so that when you're in those circumstances and you have these conversations, you can literally articulate yourself. There are other things going on in the world that really we should give some attention to. And one of the things I think that we should give some attention to is the Indian protests up in Dakota. Because literally, that's changing the dynamic of a way of life. And they're really upset behind these people wanted to drill and dig under the Missouri River like it's not going to be a problem. Oh, it's a problem. It's a very big problem. You know, and a lot of you may not have heard this, but right now in Alabama, there's a pipeline that literally pushes the water from west to east. I mean, not water, but gas, refined gas. Well, that pipeline broke and has contaminated at least 6 miles of a creek with over 60,000 gallons of gas. And you don't hear none about this on the news. You know why? Because it's not the corporate narrative. They don't want you to know that. Google it. Don't take my word for it. You see, there is no threat that we cannot converse ourselves on, because literally we are the curators of the earth. And what does that mean? That means that it's part of our responsibility to make sure that this here earth is around for our children. There's a group of people here that are defiling everything that is natural. Everything. And the sad part about that is that they're doing it in such a manner that 99.99% of the world don't know it until after they've done it. So if those people are doing their due diligence, we have to expose it. And the reason why we have to expose it is because although the largest percentage of the world won't know, those who do can take the bull by the horns and do their own due diligence and find out how to articulate the conversation so that they can bring clarity to the point of interest. Because I'm going to tell you something. Do you think for 1 minute there is any benefit in genetically modified organism food? There is any benefit in crossbreeding a human with an animal? These are debaucherous behavior by humans. And the sad part about it is that these things will come home to roost. What do I mean by that? I mean, if we don't do something, at least to show that we do not agree with, that when the time comes, and it will come, and our order is being subjective, we're being judged, because we're all judged at one time or another by the Creator. We have destroyed the very gift that He gave us. currency based on our greed. And you know what? The sad part about it, it's not our decision as people. The people that are making these here decisions, they don't even know why they're doing them. And the reason why they're doing them, so therefore they created it. And if you want to get into understanding all of that, there's a lot. There's a lot of information out here to let you know that literally we're being victimized by a people that wants to destroy everything that's good, natural, and human and moral. So therefore, they give you an illusion while they're doing something else the whole time. It is important that you make this call tonight, brothers and sisters. It's important that we bring clarity to the conversation of how we can articulate what racism is and where we stand as humanity. Because I'm going to tell you something. No one race is going to survive without the other. Let me repeat that. No one race is going to survive without the other in some capacity. And I hear people say all the time, we should treat them the way they treat us. No, 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 no. Even if white supremacy disappeared tomorrow, I would never treat another human being the way history has treated us. And the only reason is because we are not dumb people. And if we do what they did, then all we're doing is saying, yes, we are. But I know better. So I'm moving to live my life on a higher order. And that's why this conversation is important. That's why the time that we spend together is important. There's a lot of things going out there, on out. There's other things I could be doing. But I do know that we as a people, if this is going to change, it's not going to be one person that does it. We have to stop doing what they're trying to get us to do. They're trying to get us to look for a leader. So therefore, nothing gets done because no one wants to step ahead and lead. But when you become the leader, then you literally start from where you are. And your perspective can be articulated by another through the observation of your example. And this is why it's so important that we take a position that not only is befitting for our need, but what reflects the whole of humanity. Because in reality, racism is tyranny. White supremacy is tyranny. Anytime someone thinks they're better than someone else, they are looking through what I call a blind prism. And the sad part about that is some of them will stay blind. And to me, I can accept that. Why? I can accept it because I can only help if you want to change. If you don't want to change, I can't even help because that's your decision. And it's important that we understand that, because if we have the ability to make change and we don't, then we fail ourselves. But if we have the ability to make change and we do, then we are in harmony with our true nature. And I'm going to tell you something. When you know yourself, you're always happy. The person said to me, well, you know, you always feel like you're happy. I have no reason to be sad. I can't change the world. You may not like my opinion on something. I can't force you to understand why I have that opinion. I can convert with you. But if you walk away and say, look, I just don't like it, I can accept that. But we have to do something, because if we do nothing, then we are telling the world that everything is acceptable and there is no normality. And why do I say there is no normality? Because some people think, oh, well, I got a job, I can get me a paycheck, let me go and pay my bills, and come on, pay my bills, I have a couple of dollars left, I can go out and maybe do some clubbing or get some extra groceries or whatever. Well, guess what? If you're living to do that, it's not a normal life. Where's your joy? What's your up? What lifts you up? What happens when you're down? What brings you up? There are a lot of simple things that are going on that we can tap into to make change. And this, what Colin Kaepernick did, is the most simplistic, but yet has the most or overt reaction that I've seen in a long time. I'm telling you, I have not seen something so simplistic to get so
so much attention that we can use as a tool in so many directions.
Brother Davis, you have a call.
Yes.
Area code 708, you're on Tando Radio Show with Brother Davis. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Hey, good afternoon. Peace, peace. Hey, Brother Davis, how are you? It's Bragg.
Peace, brother. How are you?
All right, sir. Peace, peace. I was just listening, man. Listen, Kopernik, he did what Rosa Parks did, basically took a stand on the bus. The slave masters are not happy about that because he's created a stir, because he's made people think, question authority, question the principles of what they do every day. Some mm-hmm. people look at it like he's betrayed a certain trust. But what he did is he stood up. He stood up because he knows that it's wrong. The things that are going on, he's getting paid, but people are dying. So how can he be happy? Because it could be him. It could be you. It could be me. And that's what people have to see. It could be any one of us. We live in a system that's based on slavery. They have no respect for human life here or anywhere else. All over the planet, they're besieging
You're
people
right.
of melanated color.
And you are right.
And we all have to be aware of it. It could be any one of us. So we should all be concerned.
You are absolutely
I want to share something with you. As the 49ers are going to be playing the Carolina Panthers here Sunday, so they'll be in Charlotte, North Carolina, which I'm just outside of it. I don't attend events like this, so I won't be there. But this is something from the local media. This is what the Carolina Panthers head coach is saying. Now, when he first was asked about it, he said that he supports Colin Kaepernick's right to protest. And Ron, what is his last name? I forget his last name. Ron, what is his name? Ron something. Anyway, the coach of the Carolina Panthers, Ron Rivera, I'm sorry, who was not that long
ago. That's right.
Yeah, not that long ago. Yeah, not that long.
Best strong safety.
Yeah. Say that again.
Okay.
He used to be a best strong safety.
No, actually, he was a backup linebacker. I think
Ron Rivera, but he was a Bear, right?
Yeah, he was with the 85 Bears when they won that championship. Now, he also was a military brat. He himself wasn't in the military, but his father was. And so he's ethnically from Puerto Rico. That's his heritage, which is a country, an occupied country. Let me put it that way. The Puerto Rican islands, they are occupied. So anyway, he first came out when this first started, said that he respects Colin Kaepernick's right to protest. Now he's saying, now he's coming out and he's saying, let me just read what he said. We weren't happy with the politics in Russia, and what did they do? They were invading Afghanistan. So as far as I'm concerned, sports is sports and politics is politics. If you want to talk politics, if you want to get involved, throw your hat in the political ring. You want to make change? Vote. Vote. That's the truth of the matter. So he is capitulating to all these racist suspects around here, because believe me, the Charlotte Observer itself has participated in a media beatdown of Cam Newton since Cam Newton came out of college. And they have beat him down to the point to now he's running around talking about, I think racism is a thing of a past. Even though he went down there to Charleston, South Carolina, because a friend, an athlete he knew, mother was murdered by Dylan Roof, the terrorist in that church. Okay, so he know racism ain't gone, but they done beat him down so much, and his father has made similar comments. So I'm thinking, yeah, he getting it from his family, he getting it from the racist media around here, and so now he's capitulating. But for this man to sit up here and say, Coach Rivera, to say that, then I need to ask him, then do you think if sports and politics should not be mixed, then do you think that they need to end the national anthem at these games and stop bringing out the military color guard and what have you? Because what is that if it's not politics?
Good point.
These are they're recruiting. They're using sports to recruit people to the United States military to fight wars that politicians start but never fight.
Well, mercenary war. Absolutely. They make you a mercenary. You're an unknown mercenary to what they're doing. I was too. And the reason I got out of the military, the older guys in the military told me I came in at 18. I left out at 20. They were like, you don't belong here. You can do better than this. And I was with Vietnam-era veterans. They were like, you can do better than this. That's why I got out of the military. Back in those days, people told you the truth. They didn't mess around with you. They told you, you know, the truth. They told me if I thought that I should be there, but I was a Malcolm X student then. I was raised by the Black Panther. I got fed by the Black Panthers, breakfast and lunch. They used to bring it to our neighborhoods. I was raised in Brooklyn, East New York. The medical stuff that they do, that the state does now, the Black Panthers started that. The breakfast, they got the sickle cell vaccine because they were on it. The Black Panthers did a lot, and people don't give the Black Panthers their due. I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for them. They taught Swahili, which I don't see anybody doing now, even though I can't speak Swahili. We sat there and listened to them try to teach us. I mean, many things. You mentioned Kaepernick, and you mentioned Sterling Sharpe. I heard that Sterling Sharpe now has got an allegation of a rape since he spoke out. And if you speak out, these people will always silence you.
They try to silence you. I mean, as best they can. You have to understand now, you have literally told the world, after we've been, this is how white people care, like we've been so good to you, you are going to align yourself with that person who represents everything we detest. Well, you detest the very thing that I had to live with all my life. See, that's why I'm going to tell you something. If Shannon Sharp, any retaliation against Shannon Sharp, or any retaliation against Colin Kaepernick, the Black people are going to be tested that are on that level, because the bottom line is they're going to either get out of the game or they're going to give up the money. That simple.
I don't know. Did you hear what the ESPN, one of the ESPN analysts, I read a thing. He was saying that the sports figures have lost their minds. They think that they now own the game. Well, I was reading that statement. I actually feel that they do own the game, and they just don't know who owns the game. I don't know who you would go to watch the play. I don't watch sports anymore because I've been on a protest now for like 4 years. I don't watch sports anymore. But if I was a sports figure and they were acting like this, I wouldn't go watch any sports. I wouldn't buy a ticket. And if a lot of us didn't buy tickets, just imagine if the guys who participated in the game didn't come to play. What would the sports arena be like without the star athletes there performing? Because basically, we're watching the gladiators from the Rome. Because see, it's entertainment, and that's how Rome did. When everything was going haywire in Rome, they always had the gladiators to take the people's attention off what they were doing at the time. And I hate to get too into history right now, but to me, everything is history, and all history does is repeat itself. For those who know, if you watch history, it's a beautiful thing, because nothing is new under the sun. Nothing. And once again, everything is predicated on a slave economy. This country's built on slavery, enslaving people, and they always have done it, and they're doing it all around the world. Most people are missing it. They're enslaving people around the world as we speak.
You're right. You're absolutely right, brother. But you know the sad part about it? We have to convey this to a larger scale.
Yes, sir.
Because
yes, sir.
The bottom line is, although we're coming from the perspective of experience, because like I told you before, I don't get into that old sports thing no more either, because of the fact that nowadays we're at a sad situation where it has no benefit to us. So why should I invest myself in buying the gear, going out, watching the games, and people can't even afford a ticket? Literally, this is really what got me. The politics of the game. The cities are being held hostage by these professional teams, and if they don't build them stadiums, they'll leave.
Yep. Look, I didn't know what you're saying right now, Mr. Davis. I didn't know that these guys are financed by the public. Why would multi-billionaires be financed by me? I'm Joe Smoltz, Joe Poe. Why would I finance a multi-billion-dollar franchise? It's of no benefit. They don't educate my children. Why would I do that?
You're absolutely right. But the sad part about it is that they hold the tax base hostage. You understand what I'm saying? They would like to have a team, but the sad part about it is that even if they don't want a team, because those in the city who do want a team, and basically there are people who are going to profit from it on a level in which those people who work here never get profit from or can afford to buy the tickets. You realize the cheapest ticket in the NFL can be bought in Charlotte. You cannot buy a cheaper NFL ticket than anywhere in the league than Charlotte. And their general admission tickets at one time were $20. I don't know what they are now, but their general admission tickets at one time were $20.
And hey, I've never been to a professional football game, man. I got a thing. I used to work for public transportation, so I got a thing about big crowds, especially big crowds of people that are foreign and alien to me that drink and act crazy. I don't go in the midst of that. It's ridiculous.
It is.
Having to work, and it's not very nice. When you have to work in the middle of that, there's nothing you can do but do your job. But when you don't have to be a party to that, I stay far as away from that kind of crap as possible.
You're absolutely right, brother. You're absolutely right. I can't argue with you there. So let me ask you this here, Brother Bragg. In articulating the point in reference to how they're trying to change the narrative to appear to be they're trying to make this look like he's non-patriotic and that sort of thing, and they're not sticking to the content of the original reason why he started the protest, how do you approach that?
Well, the protest is kind of transparent. You're killing black people in front of everybody and nobody sees anything wrong. We're supposed to be a just, that the land of the free, the home of the brave. How can you make such claims? That's what he's saying. How can you make these claims when it's hypocrisy in front of your eyes? That's all he's saying. Basics, you don't believe your lying eyes, but your lying eyes saw what it saw. So what are you going to do about that? So somebody's rearranging your reality or trying to change your mind, one or the other. I don't know how to put it, but with your eyes...
But that's well expressed. At least you have an opinion. My thing is to say it's a game, is to have open conversation so that we can literally articulate particular different points of view from a position of our personal interest. And us as black people, we have to open the door so that we can have the dialogue.
Look, Mr. Davis, one more thing. You're always screaming this patriotism. Listen, check this out. I'll be digging deep down in the little rabbit holes. There were 51 signers of the Constitution. Correct. Now, they never tell you out of the 51 signers of the Constitution, 21 of those signers of the Constitution were treacherous. 30 of those signers of the Constitution were in it to win it for the Constitution. All of them and their families were wiped out. Google that. That's a mind-blowing thing that they never talk about. So 21 traitors lived, and the 30 people that were true to the Constitution got wiped out, them and their families. Now, Hamilton, they always screaming Hamilton. His real name was Levine. When he came over here, he changed his name to Hamilton. He was a party to the Rothschilds. I'm going to blow your mind because I'd be digging deep down in some rabbit holes. And a few other things, but I wouldn't like to talk about that on the air. But I'd like to talk to you sometime. Scotty, I'd like to talk to you sometime because I know you're a scholar on that Constitution. I'd like to run some things by you to see if I'm way out left or I don't think I am, but I would like to know because I look at you as an expert.
Well, brother, I'm going to tell you something. Anytime you call, we get some good content. So, we have talked off air, and then you decide that you want to call in or that you want to do a show. Listen, we need those people who are going to give something good and useful tools, we need them to take the forefront. So, feel free to call anytime you want to. I've been getting the content that you've been sending to me in my emails, but, brother, sometimes you send me so much.
I was wondering. Thank you, sir. That's what I need to know. Have you looked at any of it? Because I'm telling you, some of the stuff I've been coming up with, it blows my mind, the things that my Creator gives to me, because I ask and it is given.
Well, one of the main things I like is that, literally, I might have a particular opinion, but when I read the content of some of the information you send me, it sets my thought process in a different direction that will still help me grow as an individual, but expand my horizons in this here world of conversation in order for us to convey our issues to other people.
Yes, sir. That's all. That's what's going to take for us to get out of this situation we're in. It's going to take positive thought from all parties. I mean, there is no savior for us but us. No one can save us but us. We have to do it collectively. So everybody got to start, man, doing their part, digging. There's so many things that I see that I wouldn't like just sit out and talk about in the open, but I need to talk about with people who know what I'm talking about. Because see, some things I might say, some people might think I'm a little bit batty, but that's all right with me. I've lived with that my whole life.
I'm sorry. Was somebody talking to me?
Hello. Oh yeah, Scott. I told Mr. Davis I would like to talk to you when I can. I want to run some things by you to see. I look at you as a constitutional expert, so I like to run some things by you to see what you think about some things that I've come up with.
I wouldn't call myself an expert, but I'm knowledgeable on it. Yeah.
Yes, sir. Well, to me, you're an expert. That's for me.
All right. Thank you.
You know what they say? They say whenever the student is ready, a teacher will appear, and I believe that.
I believe that too, my brother.
Yes, sir. I believe that. All you have to do is have an ear that can hear, and an eye that can see, and you'll be all right, and a heart that can feel, because we really think with our solar plexus. Most people don't know about the fire that burns within. That's another time, another story.
Well, let me ask you this here. It's Friday night. We're getting ready to step into the weekend. My plan this weekend, I'm going to be in Columbus, Ohio at least from Saturday morning to Sunday night. I'm going to do a tribal meeting where a bunch of elders on the specific community invited me in to give them a little understanding of the connection between the spirit and the human, which is actually taking me into another different area of our spiritual growth pattern. Yes, and what do you guys plan for the weekend, man? I mean, what does yours involve?
Well, all my days are the same, Brother Davis. Some days I get up and I start words. Some days I just get up and straight read. After I deal with my dogs, I go sit down, and I lose track of time because I get lost in my books. I go through books. I go through all kind of... I just read a whole bunch of stuff. That's what I do every day. I believe in the adage that I should learn something every day. I have young people around me. I know that I'm being assaulted from all sides, whether it be frequency, whether it be the food, whether it be the electromagnetic pulse. I know that as above, so below. So I try to perfect myself inwardly. Man, I'm into so many things spiritually. I'm into no organized religion at all. But on a spiritual level, I started paying attention just to the things all around me, because it's metaphysical. If you watch nature, you see what goes on in the natural order, and there is a natural order. If you watch nature, you'll know that there is a God. You don't have to ask anybody. If you watch nature, you know there's a God by the things that you see every day. Whether it be this morning, I had a hawk hooting over me. I was trying to watch a hummingbird. I look up, and I got a hawk laying in the wind up over my head, just standing there. I'm like, wow. Things like this, they fascinate me, man. I'm just goofy that way. I just love nature. So that's how I spend my days, man. I don't really do any chasing. The only thing that I do for enjoyment, when I really get too overburdened, I jump in my hot rod, man, and jump out there wherever I can and put a little speed on the ground, and I come on back home. I'm good for the next time until I get my next speed shot. But that's it for me. I spend my days trying to learn what's going on all around. There's so many things going on. A lot of people don't know, man. People going to find out that about 90%, 95% of us are the copper color people of America. We the people that are indigenous to the country. We the aboriginals of this nation. We've been misled to think that we come from Africa. Some of us are from Africa, though. But there's no one thing that you understand. It's all the same. Africa was here. This was African. They're all the same place. If you check the pyramids on the Mississippi, you're going to find out there's more pyramids up here than it is in Africa. In the Grand Canyon. It's so much stuff that we don't know because it's been hidden from us. You know, when you go to Ohio, there are pyramids in Ohio, sir. If you Google it, you might be bothered. It's going to be pyramids in Ohio. There are pyramids in Illinois. There's pyramids in Wisconsin. Look, they don't teach this shit in school. They don't want you to know. I've been telling people my whole life, we're standing on our own stuff and we don't know it. When you hear these Caucasian guys talking about they're Americans, They're Europeans. They're not American. The copper color people are the people that Columbus found when he came here. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln said the copper color people, he called us prisoners of war.
Absolutely.
People don't know they came here and they took our stuff. And then once they killed off our parents, because see, they had a bunch of, they call them Tanos, and they call them, some of these Indians were so bad, they had to send them out of here because they would not stop. They would not, they knew what they were standing on, and they would not never give up, so they had to send them out of here. And what they did, slavery is in reverse from what you've been taught. What they did is they grabbed the copper color people here and they sent them to Europe, or they sent them to the slave places up in Judah, where they had a fort up there where they took the slaves in West Africa, and then they redistributed them in Europe or wherever. But see, this is how I do. I study slavery, I study the Constitution, I study so much stuff because they didn't teach me in school. I quit school because they was teaching me how to be a slave. And I at the tender age of 15, I was done with it. My mother was like, "What is wrong with you?" I'm like, "Listen, they're not teaching me anything. I'm going here every day, and they're telling me blue squaddle." So everybody was mad at me for a while, and they should have been, because they expected more of me. But they didn't really get it that I was wasting my time. I don't know how I knew they would indoctrinate me for junk, but I knew it then. And now I know, under the Rockefellers, you know, Rockefeller owns the school criteria. Man, if you study these people, it's mind-boggling the things that's going on around us. Did you know that the fluoride in the toothpaste that you use in your mouth causes more cancer than anything else? They don't talk about this stuff, man. That's why I read so much. That's why I study all this stuff. If you check out these vaccinations, they wreaking havoc on our young boys. Autism. They're figuring that 80% of our boys will be autistic if they keep on with these vaccinations that they're going at. But people won't go study these vaccinations that they're giving their children. Everything they do is to retard our development. They know who you are. You are the super mind. You're connected to this planet. Let me stop, because I'm not a preacher. I'm sounding like a
Let's add somebody else to the conversation. Area code 609.
Yes,
you're on Tando Radio Show with Brother Davis. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Greetings to you, Brother Scotty, Brother Braggs, and Brother Davis. This is Ross. How you doing?
All right, Brother Ross. How are you?
I'm good. Peace. What's good? I just wanted to chime in. I missed the healthy portion of the beginning, but I came in during the discussion on Colin Kaepernick, and it made me think of something that actually Scotty and I were discussing on BTR Community, and it has to do with some people. I remember there was another, I think, ex-football player who tried to question his blackness.
Yeah, that was the guy Rodney Harris, but he later apologized because he didn't know that Colin Kaepernick had a black parent, he said. So he did apologize, but you're right, he did come out and attack his blackness, saying he ain't even black, so he can't speak on it.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to touch on, because it really nauseates me when I hear black people say to other black people or question other black people's blackness. Because if you really look at what Colin Kaepernick is doing, he is more African than some of the darkest black people that I've ever seen in my life. And the reason I say that is because his entire approach to why he was standing up the way he is has to do with a communal-centric view of the world, which is the most African way of viewing the world. We never put the needs of the one above the many. And that's exactly what he's doing. It's one of the most selfless acts that a person that is black can do. And if you look at him, regardless of what his shade is, his heart is African. His behavior is African. The stance he took is African. And what Brother Bragg said about these players not showing up to the game at all, and it's funny, I said this too in a discussion with one of the brothers that I met from on the Cal's radio show. And I was saying, think about it, if every sports athlete just said, you know what, we're all not going to work. Just think of that. Just one day, if they all want basketball, football, baseball, every sport you could think of in this country, if every one of them got up and said, we're not doing a thing until they start fixing this. And if you think about it, exactly what Bragg said is correct. Every time white people do something that is clandestine and highly destructive, they start all forms of entertainment, and usually it's sports or it's violent entertainment. And this is the way that they move the minds of the people, exactly like you said, to obfuscate reality while they're doctoring reality behind the scenes. And then by the time you come out of the stupor of the football game or whatever other, you know, entertainment that they put in front of you for that time frame, you realize that your whole life has been flipped upside down legally and you're not even aware of how it took place. And that is something that, you know, when I think about it, like you look at Minister Malcolm, you know, his mom, had a white parent and a black parent. His father was black, and no one could ever question his Africanness or his blackness simply because of the life that he led. So to me, if you are black, I don't care. I'm not going to question you. You know, my mother's light-skinned. She's Carib Indian, and we have ancestry from Ethiopia and a couple other places in Africa. And, you know, I'm darker than she is. You know what I'm saying? My father is actually crystal black, as they would call it. And he's of Carib descent as well, which were also black indigenous Americans, and of Ghanaian descent, and a couple other African ethnic groups. And the whole idea is that as people, we don't choose what our lineage is due to the fact that all of us have been victimized in some form or fashion, especially in the Western Hemisphere. So when you see another light-skinned black person, you can't look at them and judge them based on their color. You know, we all have been victimized here. And the idea is that you don't choose what happens to your ancestors 7 generations, 3, 4 generations removed from yourself. You are the product of whatever happened to those people. And the idea that Colin Kaepernick could look and understand the predicament of his people on such a high level, and just like I believe it was Brother Davis who said, he took years to prepare for this moment. This isn't something where he just woke up one day and said, you know what, F that, I'm going to just go out there today and start the protest. He understood that he had to put himself financially in the situation because he understands that white people form like Voltron. And the moment that he stood up for his people and made that public statement, he understood the scrutiny he would be under. He understood the fact that he could lose his livelihood. And he prepared for that, which is what you're supposed to do. You don't make dumb decisions. Just like they say in the Art of War, the idea, the best form of winning a war is to win it without firing a single shot. So you have to outthink your enemy, and we're not outthinking them. They have trained us, they have brutalized us into becoming reactionary people. We wait for them to do something to us, then we run out and we protest. We don't think 10 steps ahead of them. They've been thinking 500 years ahead of us. And that has been the major issue, is that we have been taught to be reactionary. And not only that, we have taught to be reactionary with one another. So you'll look at a Colin Kaepernick and say, well, he's not black enough, when the real issue is the white people that actually made Colin Kaepernick have to be in a psychological position where he has to prepare years in advance to basically say, I'm ready to go out. And this is what we have to understand. This is what we all have to do. This is why shows like this, where we talk about preparation and being prepared for what's coming, is so important, because we're not taught to do that. We have been, for 500 years, placed in a situation where everything we have done has been reactionary. What's Master going to do today? What's he going to say today? Is he going to kick me off the plantation today? Is he going to take my house today? Is he going to gentrify me out of my neighborhood where I grew up? These are all things that we're constantly thinking about, and we're always reacting to something rather than being preemptive. And if we look at what he did, there's a lot we can learn from that. Yeah. And there's a lot that these black folks who run around talking all of this, you know, they're so black, and this person is less black than they are, and these people are the ones who are doing absolutely nothing. And if you look at the people who are bolstering the system of white supremacy, when you look at the different politicians, I forget the name of the I believe he's a congressman who used to work with Dr. King.
Bobby Rush, Bobby Seale,
John Lewis.
No, John Lewis. Look at what he does, and look at how dark he is, and look at what he does on a public forum for young black people to see. That this is how you act when white people come around. You put your head to the ground and you shuffle your feet and you ask them what they want you to do. And you look at this young black male with his big African afro. He looks just like one of the Beja people from the Nile Valley. And he does not even give them the acknowledgement, because he understands that flag is an offense to every black person that's alive. That U.S. flag, that Confederate flag, the Star Spangled Banner, the first gangster rap record in the Western Hemisphere is the Star Spangled Banner. When you understand all of this stuff, There's no way you can stand for this stuff and call yourself conscious. You have to understand that these people are your enemy. They have indoctrinated you in a system of white supremacy to worship them as your enemy, and you have to work to liberate yourself from that. And every black person that was in the Western Hemisphere, we all know they originated in Africa, but they've been here so long, they can't trace their lineage back any further. They've been here that long. And that has to be respected and understood. And what those ancestors did, just like when my parents got here, the first thing they did when they got here from Trinidad and Tobago was they made me understand that I cannot judge any black person that I meet in America. I have to pay them homage because they were the ones who fought and died to allow my parents to come here on an airplane in 1971 instead of on a slave ship. And when you come to someone else's house, you have to pay them that respect. And when these people are your people, which is what you are. You are my people. I am your people. We have to respect the struggles of our other groups of black people all around the world who are fighting white supremacy. And what they do is they turn us against one another. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we have to work out and understand, that we have to work as a collective. And I think Colin Kaepernick did one of the greatest jobs at showing us what having a communal-centric mindset can do when you really are conscious of your Africanness and you choose to display it in a way in which you are uncompromisingly black.
One of the
brother, I'm gonna tell you, I like that.
We do got another caller. We got about 17 minutes left in the program. Let me go to the caller. But before I do, I want to throw this out there for a consideration about Colin Kaepernick. And what's so impressive to me about him is that he was given up by a 19-year-old white mother for adoption because she says she couldn't take care of him. So he is then adopted by the Kaepernicks, a white man and a white woman who had lost children because of heart defects. And so they adopt Colin at 6 months old. So they raise him as a Christian. Note what I'm saying. They raised him as a Christian. Of course, they couldn't raise him as a black man because they're not black. So they couldn't teach him anything about his culture or his father's, you know, culture or lineage or the history or anything like that. So here is a young man for his entire life being raised by white people to be nothing but a Christian, okay, to be a Christian and a good American. And he is now turning, what, he's about 28 years old, and this is what I had heard him say, that he came to the position that he has come to at this point in his life through research and looking at the historical record and looking at out at what is going on today. So that is a remarkable story, as we do know that a lot of white people, when they adopt black children, they do not have those children's best interests really at heart and are really not even prepared to even raise a black child to deal with all the things that black child's going to have to grow up and deal with in a racist society. So that part of his story, that kind of background for him to be raised in whiteness to then for his blackness to come shining through is pretty amazing to me.
Hey, Scotty, there's a black queen behind him, though. You're going to look a little bit deeper. He got a black queen supporting him, standing him up. He's got background. He got good background. He got a black queen with him.
Let's go to area code 701. Thank you for hanging on. You're on Tando Radio Show. Brother Davis is leading us in this conversation. Go ahead with your question or comment.
All right. First of all, I'd like to say to all of you, blessings, peace, liberation, and all of the other wonderful things that we as the progenitors of creation have perpetuated in understanding through the positiveness of our being. The brother that was speaking prior to you, to take nothing away from you.
That was Brother Ross. Brother Ross.
Yeah, Brother Ross. Okay, I'm Aski, Brother Ross. All praise be to all of you. I'd just like to simply say one thing and get off of the line because I don't want to hold this up. You know, I'm so thankful and digging on what you're saying. I'm going to let that go. But because he is who he is and he's in the way he's in, he will take this on where it needs to be taken from. The Constitution as he well knows, and as you probably, as all of the other people know, it's tens of thousands of years old. And the Constitution as we have it now, you know, Abraham Lincoln, all that other stuff, is a allowance that was given to do commerce in the United States of America, because as us being the Moors and the original people of the earth, we had the Moore's Constitution, which is known as the Peace and Friendship Treaty of 1787, and it's been ratified, so on and so forth. I get into all that in a later date when y'all bring that up. You know, I don't want to manipulate the time or anything, but the only thing that anybody, as a sister that was killed recently, not long ago and whatnot, which they wouldn't allow on the air, she had to say it, and any of us can do as the Moorish people, and or regardless of whatever religion or whatever classification, if you're not considering yourself what they understand as the thing from which we are and which allowed them and created everything to be as it is, you're not going to get respect anyway. And I don't know if even if they respect that anymore, but anyway, the whole point of what I was trying to say was just that if you are going under your indigenous original things outside of their system, if you do not bring up the fact that if I have not violated Article 6 of the Peace and Friendship Treaty, then, you know, you ain't got nothing coming. You know, if they did not understand, the police officer ain't going to understand. You have to at least be a captain in order to know about that, or a commissioner or mayor, which you all know. So all I'm simply saying is, for those brothers and sisters that are practicing their Moorish heritage and are practicing the original stuff, make it clear to them that if you are not stating that, if I have not violated Article 6, which is the same thing that we gave to them, Lincoln and all those other people, Abraham and Washington, I ain't going to go there, you know, by Article 6, then I don't even know if they respect that anymore, but if they still do, then they're not going to get any play. That's all I had to say, you know. Peace, liberation, love, everything from everybody's perspective, position of spirituality and religion and faith and belief and so on and so forth. That's all.
Yo, brother, before you go, there's a book out called The Negro, the Moor, and the, I can't even think of it, by the Noble Drew. It slips my mind, but it gives a lot of background in exactly what you talked about. I appreciate you calling us, man. I appreciate you calling us. And look, if you hear it, take the time to give us a call.
Brother David, could I ask him one thing? Hey, brother.
Oh, yeah,
do you know, do you know of Emperor Moy Toy? Do you know who that is, bro?
Excuse me?
Do you know who Emperor Moy Toy is?
Emperor Montoy?
Yeah, Moy Toy. He was the emperor here in America.
I lightly, and I say lightly only out of respect of truth.
From the Iroquois Federation, Iroquois Postal Service, that's universal right now. You know what I'm talking about now?
Right. I was exposed to that, yeah. So I will say, yes, I do know what you're talking about, but I cannot, if you would have asked me a question, I couldn't positively relate or directly, not positively, but directly relate on a particular thing that they may have did or whatever, but in my studies, I did become aware of that problem because of my scarring.
I just mentioned it because Emperor Moy Toy was in control of this land when these Europeans first came here, and they started negotiating with him, and he told them when they were trying to buy land, he was like, how can you sell land? You can't sell that which is not yours, because the land belongs to the people, and they were here to take care of the, what they told the invaders was, we'll share the land with you. And then George Washington, the first president, him and his people came and usurped everything that they did. That's when we begin the breaking of all the treaties. I just wanted to know if you were familiar with that, because a lot of times I study so much.
I'm familiar with what you're saying, but like I said, I don't have the text or anything in front of me where I can relate in a way, or commit it to memory where I can relate in a way that I would be comfortable with, but I do know what you're talking about, yes.
Yes, sir, yes, sir. Because most people don't know this country is based on the Iroquois, our government set up after the Iroquois Federation. That's where our government comes from.
You know who I learned that from? I learned that from a rapper by the name of Immortal Technique. I learned that from him. about the Iroquois Nation and the Federation they had set up and how the Constitution was actually based on what was already here and already done by the indigenous folks. If you look at a map of the Mississippian culture, which spread...
Just for 1 second. The Mississippi is the Nile River because this is the origin of Africa.
Right.
1,500 pyramids on the Mississippi.
Yeah. So the Mississippian culture, you can actually find a map of it and all their town, well, they didn't call them cities or towns, but, you know, these were trading posts, trading routes. Now, if you take a map, look it up, Google Mississippian culture, you should, and go to images, and you'll come up with a map of the Mississippian culture and all of their trading centers and the routes. And if you lay the modern map of the United States over that, you will see that all these Europeans did was come and build right on top of what was already here. They didn't forge nothing.
Thank you.
It was already here.
They didn't do nothing. All they did was steal and co-opt. That's all they did. They stole and co-opt everything that the indigenous and the melanated people of the world did. I'm saying, I'm going to say this one more time. There was a takeover of the world. And when they talk about 1492, that's when the world, we fell out of power all over the world because we controlled the world up until that time. When they say Slav, they're not talking about us. When they say Slav, they're talking about the Slavian people. That's the first slaves. That's the slaves that the Byzantine emperors, which were people of color. Also, if you go to England, Scotland, Ireland, all of those are people of color. That, a matter of fact, England, Ireland, these people are the Jacobians, which would be the Israelites. That's a whole other conversation. But, man, it's deep. We have much more than we know. That's why when I tell people, you claim the world. It should be no distinction between one brother from another. But because we have let master deceivers in our midst, they have separated us in our own minds.
Excuse me, brother. Israel originally means Islam, and we know Islam means I self, law, master. So I'm just saying that to add to what you're saying in a respectable way of understanding that our culture has been twisted and divided in so many different ways that if you haven't had the initial understanding, you know, look how far that the people and all of us, you know, have to go in order to understand that if we haven't had that initial training.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That comes from the Black Panthers and stuff they started teaching me when I was a kid. They made me always dig, especially when I found out that I was, everything that I was ever taught was a lie. That's something that 1619, the first slaves, Virginia Town, Georgetown. Man, listen, that kills me because that's what I was taught in school. The Pilgrims, all this crap. They fill your head with a bunch of crap, so you can't be a conscious person or you can't be a critical thinker when your head is full of crap.
Exactly.
But that's a part of the problem with us because literally we've been carrying the deception as part of the Westernism was taught into us through their process. So you're absolutely right, and that's the reason why we have problems communicating with each other.
All praise be the positive. Excuse me, I didn't mean to cut you off, my brother. All praise be the positive, brother George Clinton, for making the record that it made the statement deprogram and reprogram yourself to the truth.
Yes,
and with all due respect, with, you know, I don't know if anybody does or doesn't like him, but I'm just saying I'm giving respect to everybody that has done and made an effort to do anything to bring us out of the programming and the negativeness that has led us and has made us in the situation that we're in, where we're not able to defend and able to feed and able to generate the original idea of what we're here for. You know, and it brought us down to the point where we had to get graphic with it through Brother Gil Scott Heron and sisters that, you know, I'm at this point, I can't even get everybody's name out there right now. But, you know, it's like what you going to do? You're going to look at everything as if it's been some sort of pastime paradise, Stevie Wonder. Or you go look at things as Winter in America by Gil Scott Heron.
And you know what? I was thinking about Ball of Confusion. If you go into Ball of Confusion right this moment, these brothers were like on some seeing to the future serious stuff. If you go through the lyrics of Ball of Confusion right now, People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of your skin. Run, run. Talking about the drug epidemic. Oh, my goodness. Rockets to
and
the
that was going
now.
On when I was a baby. I was born
man,
in 57.
And it's right now. It's right. I was listening to it this morning.
That's
I was like,
I'm
these
saying.
Brothers has got a crystal ball.
Right, right, right.
For real.
Think about this, though. And I just want to... I'm so impressed by some of our young people out there, many of our young people, because one of the things that you brothers mentioned was key. George Clinton was mentioned. I think, was it the OJs who made Ball of Confusion? I can't remember.
Temptations.
1969,
right.
I believe. I could be wrong.
Right.
I'm sure.
I was 13 years old. That's right.
Right. So listen, I was born in 1966, so I still, as growing up, was exposed to this conscious music. But we know, I think it was what, in the 1980s or 1990s to when the script was changed to all of this negativity in so-called black music. And so these young people. So these young people, for most of their lives, have been bombarded with messages that tells them to self-destruct through negative behaviors and what have you. But still, though, even through all of that, okay, some of them have still found their way to consciousness, and I just want to acknowledge those young people.
All praise be unto. You are exactly right.
I agree, because when you talked about like George Clinton and all these people, these are the people that we were sampled. So we started learning just from paying homage to those people who came before us, whether it was jazz artists, funk, you know, you name it, bottom line. So that's highly, highly important. And another thing I wanted to touch on about Colin Kaepernick, now that you've divulged that information, Scotty, you really blew my mind with that, because if you think about it, he is a product of a mixed-race relationship with a deadbeat mom. Usually it's the black male who's considered the deadbeat. His mom was a deadbeat, gave him up for adoption. He lived with two surrogate white parents. And still, Africa spoke to him so intensely that as at the young age of 28, he understood how the system works well enough to stand up and do something like that. And like I said, I've seen crystal black males with two black parents who would never do what he did. And it's not
absolutely.
Yeah, it's, and the thing is that we have to stop that. That anti-blackness is what they feed off of. That's what propagates the system. It's us, like Dr. Wilson would say, squabbling amongst ourselves while the puppet master is sitting there like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain pulling all the strings. And this is what we have to end, so that we can start doing something about this, because it's imperative. Like we're getting so close to the end, it's like people don't understand. When this hits the fan with this whole collapse, it's going to be major. It's going to be seriously major.
Hey, listen, do two men in a burning building have time to stop and argue, or should they be trying to find a way out that building?
Finding a way out the building.
Hey, hold on, Scott. We are running over, brother. Is this cool?
I do need to shut it down. So, Brother Davis, if you would like to give your final thoughts on today's program.
Listen, once again, we take a simple subject, add great minds, and we find ways to solution. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. Keep adding to the resources so that we can have a greater pool to select from. Y'all have a blessed weekend, and I look forward to you on next Wednesday. Wise Wednesday, and we're looking forward to you right here at Black Talk Radio. We still have programming left for tonight, and we got a weekend of surprises. So keep us tuned in. This is Brother Davis, and I am out.
Gold dinar would have had serious consequences for the world financial system, but may also have empowered the people of Africa, something black activists say the U.S. wants to avoid at all costs.
We're slicing cake.